Welcome. I'm Halcyon, and this is Hug Nation. Today I want to talk about deposits and withdrawals. If you look at your relationships like a bank, everything will work out. Now, maybe not in the bank like you think of it. It's not a corrupt system of money lending that preys on the poor and No. I just mean in the terms of, like, you cannot go to the bank and that you have never been to before, that you've never put money into before, and say, "Hi, I'm Halcyon, and I would like to take out some money." They would be like, "Great, how much have you put in so far?" And if you start to think of the world as a network of banks, as whether it's your relationships romantically, business-wise, or anything like that, you can start to understand how the dynamics of giving outside of a gift economy can work. In a gift economy, you know, there is no tit for tat. There is no, I'm giving you this because I want this back. I get that. That's important. That is idealistic, and that is magical. However, to create a network of trust amongst a gifting culture, you have to keep putting deposits into places so people realize, oh, you're someone who doesn't just take. And so every once in a while, I will be in a situation where I see somebody asking for help or resources, and it's someone that has, I do not have any memory of them ever giving help. And I wonder, like, huh, I'm much more apt to help if you have in some point helped me. And it's not a tit for tat. It's like, well, you gave me 10 bucks, now I'm gonna give you 10 bucks. It's more just like, oh, you have been investing in your relationships. This has been on my mind because something happened this weekend that was beautiful, and I think a really beautiful illustration of this. My friends Tim and Amy bought a property in Northeast San Diego area, 14 acres, 400 avocado trees, 40 fruit trees, sheds and workplaces and views, and it's gorgeous and it's massive. And Tim and Amy sent out an invitation to a farm warming party. Come Saturday morning, work all day with all these tasks that they need help with, and then stay the night for a little dance party if you're up for it, and then work the next day. And now, I'm not the first one to volunteer if someone needs help with manual labor. In fact, if you would message me and say, "Hey, I'm moving this weekend, could you help me?" I would have very little difficulty or shame or issue just saying, no. I might help chip in towards the cost of movers, but I realize that the time and money required to get my body and my back to normal after cranking a couch over a banister is just not worth it for me at this point in my life. So the fact that when I got this call for help, I was like, yes, is an example, is a really beautiful illustration of this withdrawals and deposits. Now, Tim is someone who is a giver. He is someone who is very skilled with his hands and knows a lot about, I would say, manly things, not to get gender specific, but, you know, like tools and fixing things and cars and hunting and fishing and making jewelry is his profession. And he's just like, maybe not making jewelry, there's probably art. He's an artist in the realm of jewelry. But he is, when we hang out, I wonder, I just being close to him, I feel like my voice drops a little bit. Yeah. He's awesome. And he's given to so many people that when he said, "Hey, I need help," 50 people showed up, put on their gloves, and said, "What can we do?" How many people, I don't know how many people that I know could have that kind of results, could have that kind of impact when they say, "Hey, can you come give me free labor?" And people say, "No question. Tell me what I can do." But it's because they have, Tim and Amy have lived their life in a way where they see their relationships as ways that they can contribute and they can give and they can give. And then when it's time for them to say, oh, I need, everyone's like, you have, your account is overflowing. How can we repay you? We were making jokes that day of like, I think Tim has been planning for this day for years, just years and years of like, okay, when I get my farm, I'm going to need to have quite a bit of equity into my social account so that I can finally make this work. And I know that there's a lot of examples of this that you might notice in your life. I know that one thing that kind of triggers me a little bit is when people will reach out to me and say, hey, can you promote this event that I'm doing? And there's two scenarios where I would say, sure. One is if it's something that I go to or have been to or people that have gone to said, this is great. And I'm like, yeah, this is something that I think people would like to know about that are reading my stuff. So yeah, I'm happy to. Or if it's somebody that I feel like is in my network and that has been depositing, that has been sharing my stuff, that has been commenting and promoting, and if I ask for help, they reply or they promote, you know, or they link, just share things of mine. But if you've never shared anything of mine, and then you say, hey, I know you have a resource that I want, which is a wider distribution than I have, can you give to me? It's like, I mean, no. And there might be a situation where I would want to do so as a gift in a kind giving way, but this feels more like a transaction that is just a good deal for you. There's another scenario that sometimes happens where there are people, I think, out there that feel like they might have the perception that they are depositing into their accounts of people because they offer things or they talk about how they're going to help or they want to do this or they've got this vision for you or this money-making scheme for you. And so in their internal story, they're one who gives. And it's tough because I think that when you're in that state of you think you're giving, you wonder why no one shows up to help you. And that's a subtle thing. And I've just started to notice there are people that I am aware of in my extended circle that I think are often asking for withdrawals. And I notice they're often the people that will volunteer to help, but it seems more of a gesture. I'm not sure if that makes as much sense as the rest of this. But one of the important things about this, you know, general concept is that not to slip into a transactional mentality. You don't want to give things because you're trying to get stuff back at some point. You know, Tim and Amy did not show kindness, pick up other people's stuff, transport things to faraway events, keeping a log of all the people that they can ask for, you know, favors in return in the future. They are just people that do that. And once you have established that that is your default mode, then you have this trust. And that's the real goal of community. That's the real goal, and the one of the reasons why Burning Man works so well is because you have such a high level of participation at this level of gifting and an expectation that people will be open and freely sharing of things, that you let go of your hold on what you have with the faith that things work out. When you feel scarcity, when you feel like nobody is, you know, the banks are closed, no one is letting you take out anything, then you hold on to what you have. So when you can have a community that is freely sharing their resources, everyone is more abundant, and you can have this flow of resources that lifts everyone up. And so seeing this weekend, seeing all the people working together, seeing this, like, you know, Tim was pointing at this shed that got cleared out. He goes, that would have taken me, you know, months of weekends before I could have that done. And that was done in an afternoon with one of the teams of people in this massive property. Now, another powerful learning experience for me for this experience was it was manual labor. And it has been a while since I have done manual labor. In fact, when I went to my mom's house, saw my folks before I went up there to work, and I borrowed some work gloves that they had down there. And my mom was like, make sure you wear the gloves. You have very soft hands. You know you don't do this very often. I was like, yes, Mom, I know, I'm fragile. In fact, later that night, somebody saw me, yeah, when we broke for dinner, and someone goes, wow, what a surprise to see you here. And I was like, what? Because it's hard work? You think that maybe? But it's true. I would not have just shown up for an opportunity to work in someone's garden. I showed up because it was an opportunity to give to Tim and Amy and to be a part of this communal reciprocation of this life of giving that they have been a part of. It was inspiring, and everyone felt that way. But the manual labor was way more, not fun is not the word, rewarding than I expected, for a few reasons. One, in this modern world, life can be very confusing. Life can get complicated. There's lots of gray. The more I learn, the more I read, the more I listen, the more I realize that absolutes are rare. You know, I like First Saturdays once a month because it is this opportunity to be kind. And I believe kindness is an absolute. I know if I'm kind to a fellow human being, that is good. But, you know, once you get into, like, professional things and tasks and everything gets muddy and confusing. And you know, in the digital world, like, was this a good use of my time? What's the effect of this? Did this matter? But moving logs is black and white. There used to be a bunch of timber here. Now it is clear. Now there is a stack of firewood here. We did this. We changed the landscape with our muscles and our brawn. And there was something very satisfying about that. And somewhat meditative as well. There were times I was on a team with two friends, and I really enjoyed working together as a team. We had quiet times, and we also had conversation times. The next day, I was on my own for a while doing the same task, and it was a very interesting experience that I only realized in retrospect. The first day, as I was working with my body and around friends and working together, I checked my phone once. I did like a real quick Facebook Live, hey, we're working. But very quickly, I was like, this doesn't feel right. I'm with these people. And, you know, did it for like 15 seconds. And the whole day I didn't touch the internet. I was very much in my body and present with the people there. The next day when I was by myself, I ended up turning on Facebook Live and putting it on a tripod and just working. There was something about being alone that I craved being connected. And that's more a callback to an episode of a few weeks ago of the Facebook addiction and maybe helps me to see a little bit more clear what are the things that I'm not at peace with. What are the things about silence and loneliness or solitude that I'm not giving a chance to settle in and be beautiful, and instead are trying to avoid the void? And what gifts are in the void that I'm avoiding in this manner? There is the famous Zen saying, you know, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. And while I have not reached enlightenment, there was a joy to carrying wood, I think, because of where I am in my path and where I am in terms of my resources and my needs. If I had to carry this wood so that my family didn't die of cold in the wintertime, there would be a fear, a need into what I was doing. But I was here in a state of gifting. I was here because I wanted to. I was here out of a place of community and joy. And so it was very pleasant and pleasurable to be using my body in the service of friends. And it made me think a lot about one obstacle that I have in a lot of things in my life. And I know I talk to people who are really into cooking or really into, you know, they love cleaning the house or things that are black and white, you know. I was talking to my brother about, man, I was sharing with him about how it was so satisfying to move wood. And he goes, dude, that's why I love doing my home chores when I have free time, is because I can see the effects. This was dirty, now it's clean. This was cluttered, now it's neat. And there is a satisfaction with the visceral impact of your labor. Whereas in a digital world or in a marketing firm or in a, you know, branding and sales funnels, you know, it's like, it's not quite the same. And I'm trying to remember that non-hurried joy of the process and trying to apply it into things in my life that I have struggled to make a priority, such as food preparation. I'm super usually like, I want food, I rush, and I, like, the idea of getting a pan dirty is frustrating for me. The idea of multiple ingredients, I'm like, why? What's the point? Let's just, And I'm trying to figure out what the pieces were about this activity that allowed me to settle into the meditative actions of it. Was it the fact that it was kind of, there was no end? There's no way we were going to move all the wood? Was it that while it was happening, I was with friends? Was it that while it was happening, I felt like I was also, you know, strengthening my body? So there was productivity, like multiple levels of productivity. Was it because it was a gift and without expectation? And I felt like if I left at any time, Tim would have been, great, thank you. And how can I apply those things to the more mundane or boring tasks of life, of the carrying water and chopping wood, that are a part of life no matter where you are on your path? So I am so grateful to Tim and Amy for their courage in stepping into their dream and to working to create this land of self-sustaining farming and beauty and expression and making it into a community hub and inviting all of this loved ones into the blessing of the space. And I know that they were in a state of overwhelming gratitude. And I think we gave them a taste of the reciprocal gratitude. That this is not a one-sided giving. This is a long-term deposit and withdrawal system that by being there for each other over an extended period of time allows everyone to feel more important, more worthy, more loved, more connected, more who they are in the scheme, in the context of family, extended family, chosen family. So thank you for being a part of my extended family. I would now like to make a withdrawal. No, I'm just kidding. However, if you would like to make a deposit in a more traditional sense, you can go to lovemorefearless.com and get t-shirts, such as the one I'm wearing right now that says, be present, have integrity, align with love. You can go to Patreon, Halcyon on Patreon, and contribute in that way. But really, that's not what I'm talking about. And I apologize for making it so coarse and mundane by bringing about money. It's about energy. By liking this video, by subscribing to me, by passing on your good vibes into the world. These are all ways that we can continue to make deposits, and so that when we need it, there is a abundance in every direction that we can make withdrawals from. So thank you for being a part of this wonderful banking system. I love you. Oh boy, look at everybody who's here. Hey, everyone in the chat room. Everyone who is listening live, everyone who is watching the archive on Facebook or on YouTube or listening to the archive on Stitcher or iTunes or maybe who might be just in the bushes out my window, they can hear this right now. Welcome! You are a part of this vibration. There's a reason why every time I make a video, I do it live, because there is a energetic loop that happens that accesses things that I do not access when I'm by myself. So thank you for being my collaborator in Hug Nation. Let us have a hug, shall we? Grab yourself by the shoulders, squeeze this body. I, right now, I'm so grateful for this body. I've been exercising since the first of the year, and it was so wonderful to be able to use my body and lift things. I was careful because I'm fragile, but to feel like this body is made for purposes beyond just sitting and looking at a screen. It's made for interacting with this incredible physical world. And so give thanks for this body, for its ability to interact with this physical world in whatever way. Even if it can just walk you to the bathroom, it's a miracle. It can convert food to energy. Oh my goodness. We are grateful for these bodies, for the sensations that we experience in this amazing human experience, this human consciousness. And we're also grateful for, beneath the physical body and the physical experience, the emotional and thoughts and the identities that we put on as our ways of going through the world and our ways of making this wacky journey into one of adventure and drama and excitement and relationships. But also recognizing that these physical experiences and these thoughts and emotional experiences are just the entertainment. These are the movie and dinner of our experience as a human being. But beneath whatever we're watching on, whatever character we're rooting for in our life experience, whatever team we're on, whatever place we're in, that deep beneath the details of that experience is our humanity, is our the conscious light that illuminates us. And it's the same light that illuminates everyone, just filtered through different thoughts and different experiences. So for just three breaths, we're going to sink in beneath our physical self, beneath our ego self, into our true self, connected to all the loving light flowing through all the people on this planet. For three breaths, in through the nose and then out through the mouth. In. Last one. On behalf of Grandpa Caleb and all the love warriors, happy Hug Nation. I love you. Ah, so glad you're here. Wee! Welcome everyone who is here live, and welcome everyone who is watching this archive. My name is Halcyon. This is Hug Nation. And I am not sore from my week of manual labor, which is amazing. Makes me want to go commit to a marathon. Not really. But maybe stretch out of my fear zone about I'm going to be injured if I do anything beyond walking to the parking lot and back. So, a couple more things that I want to share. One, I just uploaded a new Burning Man Tips and Tricks video that talks about a bunch of talk about the principles and lessons from Love Burn. Some of the things we talked about last, actually it's all things we talked about last week if you were here, but if you didn't see last week's, check out on YouTube or iTunes the new Burning Man stuff. Is good, I think. And a couple more things I want to talk about. Are we good? Can we keep going? Should we hug some? Like, okay, one more. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. You know what? Let me jump right into hugs. So there was an article in the Washington Post maybe it was a couple days ago. It's called Is the Era of Hugging Over? Is that what it's called? That said something like that? Is the Era of Hugging Over? Some people sure think so. And that's overly dramatic. But what they were talking about was in this Me Too movement, in this awareness of boundaries and kind of unspoken crossing of lines, and in this increased awareness of what is perceived to be sexual harassment, that a hug certainly can be. And I've heard many countless stories of people who have been hugged in ways that cross the line. And it's unfortunate that a hug is anything that involves wrapping the arms, you know, because there's a huge difference between greeting someone and touching chests, and greeting someone and pulling them in and pressing your genitals against them, or holding them tight. Or one person said an example of someone pressed their erection against them because they were meeting on a first date and the guy wanted to make sure that it was worth his time. Say what? Well, of course that is harassment. Of course that's inappropriate. And it's a world different than a hug. But let me take a few steps back. When I was in my late 20s, in the beginning, after Burning Man was started to get into my world, I tried to make an overt point to hug people. You know, in every scenario where people would be shaking hands, I was trying to hug them. I was trying to lower the walls of intimacy that are default in our culture. To me, a handshake has always been something that is businesslike. It keeps someone, it's a control thing. It keeps, you know, like you're measuring the person up. It does not have a lot of warmth to it and connection. And so I was trying to do more hugging everyone as a way to say, I invite you into far more intimacy than default. And I did that for many years. And I kind of felt like it was almost part of my mission and part of my activism was to, even if somebody thought, whoa, that's pretty intimate, it's like, yes, because I feel the world should be more intimate. And after years and years of doing this, I had a few people stop me and say, that's, you know, knock it off, that's out of line. And it was very hard for me to hear because I don't like being corrected, but I also, it's like, I don't want to think of the world as being this place that requires so much protection and having our guards up and being like the default being, I'm worried that you're going to take advantage. But a number of people talked about how they don't like being touched. And someone, and about how like a man, my argument was, well, but if I put my arms out, that is a nonverbal communication that I'm up for hugging. And if you can reply, you could put out your hand and that says, no, that's not what I want. But people made the case that a man, a big man coming at a woman with his arms open is too much. And it can be a trigger and you need to ask. And this did not seem like the perfect solution for me because asking for a hug is different than hugging. Saying, can I have a hug is now a transaction. I'm asking for something. May I hug you? I'm also giving something. These are both like transactional things. What I really want is I want to share a hug. I want our me's to dissolve into a we. And maybe it's semantics, but can I have a hug or may I hug you is not the path to that melting, that sinking into connection. At the same time, I recognize that the cost or the respect that people are asking for is valid. And what I came to as a solution is that I now ask people, are you a hugger? I feel like, are you a hugger? Allow someone to say no, and then we can handshake. If they say yes, then our greeting is a hug. And then we can mutually hug one another. We can hug, we can share a hug. But to be totally honest, it's not the same. And that's okay. It's taken me a while to get that to that place, but that's okay. In the same way that, you know, looking into someone's eyes and leaning in and giving them a kiss is different than saying, "May I kiss you? Would you like a kiss?" These are all different energies and dynamics, but that's okay. Especially in the landscape we have right now, where we need to err on the side of respect and err on the side of awareness and err on the side of awareness to other people's needs and boundaries. I think this general chapter, this general shift, and this general awareness that I was causing people discomfort with my hugging had pretty significant effects on me. And I think that I am less warm in places where I am meeting strangers. But perhaps that's for the best. Perhaps that is the place that we need to get to. That consenting to be touched is enough of an issue that a hug requires negotiations beforehand. It's interesting to me because, to me, I find a handshake to be far more requiring of negotiation. A hand to me is germy and gross, and if you touch me with your hand, now I have to go wash my hands. If we touch chest to chest with our shirts, whatever, that's fine. I'm not gonna like lick my shirt and get your germs in my mouth, but there's a good chance I'm gonna touch my face at some point. So from a germ-phobic perspective, I find a hug to be far. I'll hug way more. I hug homeless people. I forearm bash if they go in for a handshake. Not, I don't mean to generalize homeless people, but in general, that when I meet someone who I know is not clean, and that's not a judgment, that is the reality of not having access to soap and water, then I'm still comfortable hugging you. I would much rather keep my germ pockets, my germ mittens, away from other people's hands. All this being said, this would be a whole different conversation if there was an established definition of what a first-time hug is. The first time you hug someone should be a chest-to-chest, no groin contact, an A-frame, you know, connect. Unless there is an establishment that that person touches you back in a way that is inviting, that is more intimate, that is a deeper welcoming of physical space. Because man, it is sure awesome when two huggers give each other permission to go deep, isn't it? But that is not a good enough bounty or prize to put people in awkward situations and make people maybe do things or trigger people that don't deserve it. So is the era of hugging over? No. That's like saying, is the era of human contact over? No. But there are shifts to the dynamics and shifts to the dialogue and shifts to the ways that we do these things. And I think that it's an important conversation. It's an important to also, it's important for also for people like me to hear stories from people about bad hugs and about people's experiences with hugging that have been traumatic or frustrating. You know, just in today when I linked this article from the Washington Post, and a number of people shared stories of hugs that went too far. And it's telling that these moments were so memorable. Like when you go to, when you approach a scenario that potentially can be one of intimate warmth, and instead it becomes one of feeling violated. Yeah, that's dangerous. Many of the best things in the world that are wonderful are also dangerous, like fire, like the internet, like drugs. When dealt with respectfully, very powerful and wonderful. When abused, very dangerous. So I'm eager to hear how other people's reactions are. If you've felt a change in your life, if you felt like things have gotten better or worse, if you have a strong line, or you have a way that you have traversed this landscape so that it's less awkward and more consensual all the way around, please let me know in comments or a message, or stop me in the street and give me your hug spiel. Oh, there you are. Are you a hugger? You are. Ah, thank you. I love you. And thanks for the hug. I didn't want to use your name, but since you, Amy was the one who shared the first date hug. It was a great example of someone taking something beautiful and making it ugly. That being said, if you had an established relationship with somebody and they're a long-term lover of yours and you have a history of that, it might be appropriate to be like, I have been thinking about you all day, and then give an erection-filled hug. But that's advanced hugging between people that have a relationship and a history. And if you have an erection, that's kind of like having a knife in your hands. The onus is on you to protect the other person from your weapon, whether that be penis, knife, bad breath, anything. In that order. Hopefully not all three. Speaking of bad breath, has anyone ever hugged Amma, the hugging saint? I went to go see her in LA years ago. And if you're not familiar, Amma is a saint, and she travels the world and hugs tens of thousands of people a day, maybe more than that. And people have spontaneous healings, and she's also got a massive charity network that does really good in the world. And as someone who loves hugs and identifies much with the power and the magic of hugging, I felt like I needed to see the guru, the hugging guru. And it's an interesting scenario where you go to this big hotel, and you go in like a waiting area in your group, and then another area, and then it's your turn and you're kind of like on deck, and then they kind of like escort you like on your knees up to her, and they kind of lean you in, and you lean in and hug her, and then they escort you away. So it's a whole team of people that kind of like this assembly line of hugging. I did not experience spontaneous healing or tingles or lightness or anything magical. It was a warm and loving embrace. And it smelled wonderful. I realized that if you're going to hug 10,000 people who have been hanging out in a hotel all day waiting for you, there's a good chance that you're going to get some stank on you. So she was covered in oils and amber and some other wonderful smelling things. And that's something that I borrowed from her. And so if I'm at Burning Man and doing a lot of hugging, I put some essential oils and stuff so that I can make the hugging connection infused with a warmth of smell in addition to a body warmth and an energetic warmth, especially when you're hugging lots and lots of people. I have a signature scent that I'm not going to tell you what it is, but if you've hugged me, you may have noticed. Even if you smell good, you should be wary of your erection and any knives or cutlery that you have in your hands. I think that just goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. So, Chumley's saying there should be a new class at a local community college called Advanced Hugging 101, A-Hug 101. Interesting that you say that. The first time I really got schooled on approaching someone for a hug and where it wasn't wanted and they were bothered by me, it was at an event that was kind of like an unconference where people write out on a whiteboard things that they want to teach, ideas of, you know, for conversations, or that. And somebody, after I did that hug to them, that they were very vocal in their displeasure with me, they then put on the board for the curriculum that they did, they wanted to do the consent of hugging talk. And I will admit that I was stirred up and hurt and had not processed all of this, so I did not go to that. I felt targeted and I felt small and weak, and it was a learning experience for me, but it was not one that I, at the time, I was wounded from it at the time. But I think that Hugging 101, in fact, there's Chris Luth, a local hugging professional. He does seminars all the time, and I've gone to one of his hugging seminars at events where he teaches kind of different styles of hugs and how to hug people at different heights of you, and when a hug can become intimate, and how to gauge when you might, you know, shift into more of a body hug and different types of hugs. And one more thing on hugs before we leave, because it's all fun and games until someone crosses a line, and I'll tell you what crossing the line is. You're familiar with the heart-to-heart hug? Nothing wrong in and of itself. Traditionally, we hug like this, right? Like, yes, like this. But in the last 5, 6, 7 years, a number of people have started to request or desire a heart-to-heart hug, the other direction, so that our hearts are aligned. And that's great, if that's what you like. I mean, an embrace is an embrace. It's good, good, good. The problem is that, and I'm going to give you a tip, if you're someone that likes heart-to-heart hugs, avoid stopping someone as they approach you and go, no, do it this way, heart-to-heart, because then what you've done is you've corrected someone, you've told them wrong, no, you've bopped them on the nose with a newspaper, and then, so as you're going into the hug, you're like, I did something wrong, wait, what? And so you're not present for the second hug, no matter how good it is. If you are one who wants a heart-to-heart hug, do a traditional hug, and then say, hey, can we do another one, heart-to-heart, and then do that. Or you might be someone, some people are really deft, is that the word deft? In maneuvering. And so as you go in for a hug, they move their body in a way so it's very obvious. So they allow you to correct and to meet them, which is similar to like putting your hands out as a nonverbal. But I think it's really detrimental to the process of surrendering into the moment to be corrected and free right off the bat. And if, just so I can say it, there was a time when people were circulating the rumor that traditional hugs were toxic because they were liver to liver. And heart to hearts were the ones that were good for you. To which I say, nay, no, niet. No. Hugs are good. Hugs are good from this way, that way, sideways, from the front, the back. Human connection that's consensual is good. Even livers are good on the inside of the body, but maybe that's too much information. So I am always up for a hug if you ever see me out and about. I might be in the middle of something, but as soon as that's over, I would love a hug. And I sincerely hope that we get a chance to hug. And if we've hugged, I hope we get a chance to hug again, because at the end of the day, how do you count the value of a life? I'm measuring hugs. I'm measuring hugs. Okay, that was a song from Rent, but you probably would not recognize it from the way I sang it. 575,010,000 hugs. I'm a twist. Okay, one more thing I did want to talk about is that, did anyone read the Quincy Jones interview in Vulture? Oh my God, this is the interview to end all interviews. This is the most fascinating, he's 84 years old, he knows everybody. He trash talks the Beatles. He talks, tells who killed JFK. He talks about Trump and the Clintons and Oprah. It's like, it's insane. He's the most confident, the most no fucks given person ever. It's, go see, look up Quincy Jones interview or Quincy Jones Vulture. It's so good. There's a couple things in it that one, he was commenting about how he's never done any work for money or fame. And the way he phrased it, he said that when you do things for money, God walks out of the room. And I love that idea. It's something that I have struggled with and something that I sometimes talk to people about, which is that people often have this dream of doing what they love for a living, but that there's this window of time when you are struggling to make a living doing what you love that's very difficult. It's very difficult to listen to the muse and listen to your landlord's requests for rent money at the same time and not disregard the muse. It's very tempting to try to adjust your art to be something that is marketable. And I love the way that he said that. If you're listening, you know, you can't listen to the muse and listen to landlord. That's my wording. His word is God walks out of the room. And I just thought that was beautiful. The interview in the footnotes, it said, well, keep in mind, you know, Quincy Jones did make a crap ton of money on Thriller and all these things like that. So there is this window. Once you get to a certain point and you have a certain amount of resources, you can do whatever you want. It's that window where you're afraid you might not be able to make rent and you need to sell two paintings. And should you paint what your heart tells you to paint, or should you paint what you know will sell at the Art Mart this weekend? Art Mart? Street Art? Street Art? Street Walk? Art Walk? I don't know. Art? Yeah, see, that's the problem. There's not enough places to sell your art. Answer that, Quincy. The other thing that there was this long conversation about sophisticated music, and he badmouths all modern musicians and just is really, it's like, he's like the most angry grandpa ever talking about these kids today and their music. But he's talked about there's a conversation about jazz and Coltrane, and I admit I know nothing about jazz. So I decided I would listen to some of this cutting-edge jazz and this Coltrane that they were talking about. And I know that this is going to betray my sophistication, but I hit play on Coltrane's Ascension. And I'm like, wait, do I have multiple tabs open? Are there multiple songs playing at the same time here? Or this is all of this is in this... These musicians are playing together right now? Yeah, no, this is what my computer sounds like when I forget that, like, I reload my browser and all of a sudden six things have music playing at the same time and it's just cacophonous. That's my jazz review. So, Quincy, judge me as you may. Hopefully not as badly as you judge the Beatles, but I suppose I deserve it. And finally, before we log off, I want to dedicate this week's broadcast to Brent Monk. Brett. Brett. Brett was a Hug Nation follower and friend back in MySpace days, and has been an internet friend for, you know, decade plus. And he took his life this week. And so you know, I'll go long and just say, I have talked a lot about suicide on Hug Nation in the past, and I will again, and maybe do a specific episode to talk about it. And I'm not one to say suicide's bad, you should never take your own life, because I believe in the freedom of our consciousness, and I believe in the right to our own life, and I believe in the right to our own minds, and I believe in the right of consciousness expansion, and I believe in the right to, you know, augmentation of your body. I believe in the freedoms of your experience. And if you decide that you no longer want to be living in this dimension, in this body, in this time, in this consciousness, then that is your gift to refuse, or to close the door on. And it's up to you to decide when that is over. I am of the mind that this is a classroom, and if you say, I'm dropping the class, okay. I do believe that dropping the class does not excuse you from the curriculum. And in the multi-dimensional, energetic, divine awareness of your learning, you don't get to skip it. And you might have to learn it again. You will have to learn it again. You can't quit. You can quit this life, but you can't quit the process of learning and struggling and growing. And so I sometimes, when I've had moments of thinking like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, or these struggles are too much, or some fatalistic perspective that might tiptoe into suicide, I remember that all things considered, this classroom's pretty awesome. I have a healthy body, I have a network of friends, I've got access to clean water, I have a roof over my head, I'm not enslaved, I'm not in prison, I'm not being human trafficked. As far as places to learn things, this body, this lifetime, this time in history is pretty freaking awesome. Is it hard? Sure, but it's not going to be easier in some other time, place, dimension. So I suck it up, and it always gets better. There is a trite saying that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem, and I think that for most people that is true. I think that way too often we quickly try to end suffering for a chapter of suffering that is finite. I know that I have, you know, I can map my life and go, how crazy how many times I thought it's all over, I'm done, I got nothing left to do, best is behind me, I'm worthless, whatever, you know, and that cycle always, it always comes back around. So I know that I better hold on to that idea for a long time before I decide to execute on it. In the same way that, like, every once in a while I'll get an idea for a tattoo, and so I hold on to that idea and go, but within a month I'm like, I don't want that anymore. Same is true with taking your life. Sit with it for a while. You can always cash that chip. At the same time, I find the idea of suicide to be very healing and very helpful and a part of my spiritual practice. Alan Watts used to say that it's one of the fundamental questions of philosophy and spirituality is the game worth the candle? Is the struggle worth the fun? And when I ever have doubts of that, I do an exercise of pondering ending my life. And then with the context of that on a spectrum of extreme actions, with suicide being on all the way, the most extreme thing I could do, suddenly I realize how much exists between there and where I am right now. And there's all these things that I would not consider because they would be disruptive of my life or might offend someone or might be scary or have risks. But it's like, oh, but if I'm pondering the most extreme thing, then why not take a risk and book a one-way flight somewhere? Or why not get that tattoo that I've always wondered about? Why not do these things that are, because, and just that pondering, just that opening up of this huge spread of life experiences that are risky and scary and potentially dangerous or damaging, but are not suicide, suddenly opens up this world of opportunity and can free me from the closed mindset of I'm trapped, I suck, it's never going to change. Oh, there's a lot of things I could do, which is why I'm getting my face tattooed. No, not really. But I'm not going to be somebody who says, suicide bad, suicide valid, but often the path to it is flawed. So if by any chance you catch this broadcast and you are having thoughts like Brett did, I would urge you to sit with it. Sit with it. it might be unbearable, but maybe that struggle is the classroom, is the lesson that you need, that your eternal consciousness needs or desires to break through into a place that will be fantastic, that will be wonderful, that will be a gift to you, and in your healing, a gift to the planet, the universe. And maybe in that place of struggle and pain, you can open up the things that you could possibly do. Maybe there's a life of service that you've never realized that you had available to you. Maybe there's a lot of things you could try before you cash in that chip that's always available to you. And if you get to that point where you say, I'm cashing this chip, talk it through with someone. Talk it through with me. I will not talk you out of killing yourself. I might ask you questions. I might make a plan to do something together. I might invite you to an event or see if you want to go on a beach walk. Of course, if you bluff me to try to get a beach walk, yeah. But the human mind, the human perspective is so flawed. Whatever is, make sure that you get some feedback and you get some collaboration and corroboration before you make that permanent solution happen. It's valid. It's a valid decision in many situations, but make sure it's valid for yours. Because the number of people who have come back from that darkness to give profound gifts to humanity is so huge. I would guess that most of the people contributing in the most dramatic, profound ways to the world are ones that have made it through the Valley of Darkness, maybe multiple times. So know that I believe in you. If you can't see it, I see it. And know that as someone who has suffered from depression many times in my life and through for many years at times, I know that it's hard for people who don't feel depressed to get. That depression is not something that you feel like, oh, I feel depressed. No, it's not like that. It's just like the world fucking sucks and I suck and I'm always gonna suck and it's always gonna... So just, if you trust me in any way, let me corroborate your perspective and then do what you want. Or someone that you trust. Because we're walking miracles. And there's magic in all of us. Sometimes it's the dark winters required to let the bloom open.